a better way.
And we are live. Welcome, folks, to a Monday morning. There was some chatter on the GTP course Telegram where we're doing the first inaugurational wave of the GPT course today about Mondays and hating people that love Mondays. Yeah, I hope those folks change their tune, because when you run your own thing, then Mondays are actually pretty good. I mean, there's always those times when you're like, Monday, because we enjoy our time off, but when you love what you do, you also love to work. And we're going to talk about how to get there today with the concept of the seductive lie of a great idea. And this has always been one of kind of my laws of life when I talk about it. And I am working on the second book in the series, Laws of Life 2. And I was working on the chapter on this subject this weekend and decided it would make a good show. So the chapter's not even finished, but we're going to do an episode on it anyway. And I want to explain what I mean by about the seductive lie of a great idea. And I want you to let that word sink in, seductive, seductive. And so think of whatever would be seductive to you, whether it's a really beautiful woman or a piece of cheesecake or whatever, like just seductive. The concept of the idea being a seductive lie is that it leads you to inaction. And you're going to hear about something I call life cancer today, where you have this little thing that recurs over and over and over, and it destroys your potential, which is what cancer does to the body. It destroys the body's potential. It's usually not a very fast-moving thing. Even when it seems like it's fast-moving, it's only because, well, we didn't find it until it already progressed. If we knew when it started, very long, slow process that eats you from the inside. Well, the I have a great idea thing or some other versions of it that are less about business and more about just your daily, everyday life does the same thing. It eats you away because the potential's there someday becomes never, and never becomes old age without accomplishing the things that you want in life. And we're going to dig into it pretty hard today, and we're going to get pretty, well, brutal at some points. I had a guy on X when I posted the subject say, I'm looking forward to this. I got this great thing I want to accomplish, but I honestly need an ass kicking to get it started and to get it done. The first thing you need to do to get it done is get it started, right? So what I told him, though, is you'll have a 2-5-11 by the end of this episode. What's a 2-5-11? I used to tell this to my kid when I was telling him to do something when he was a young guy, about my grandson's age now, you know, like 13, 14, when they don't want to do anything. And I'd say, if you don't get that done, you're going to get a 2-5-11. And when I first started saying it, he'd go, what's that? It's going to take two doctors 5 hours to get my size 11 out of your ass, right? So that's what that's the tempo for today's show. This is old school TSP. Like, we might as well almost be back to Jack Spirko in the Jetta yelling at you while he's weaving in and out of traffic. That's the kind of show we're going to have today. But it's all for the intent of motivating you to make things happen in your life. And I want to say something out of the gate here today. If you are the kind of person that you have this idea to build a business, this show is for you. If you already in a business, but you have this idea for a product that would go into the business, the show is for you. If you have no interest in running a business at all, this show is still for you. Whether it's being more productive at work so you can make more money by being able to require a raise of your employer because you really are entitled to it, and to do such a good job and build such a reputation that if they don't give it to you, somebody else will, and they know that. Or whether it's like getting the projects done on your homestead. Like, you've been talking about building a greenhouse for like 3 years and you haven't done anything. Like that, right? Or I'm going to expand my garden. Or like my grandfather. I really hated this for my grandfather. He was the epitome of this in his later years in life. I'm going to go fishing when there's a good frost. You know, 10 years, or apparently there wasn't a good enough frost. He spent the last 10 years of his life talking about fishing but never doing it. So it could be something that's really important to getting things done, or it could be something that's just recreational in your life. This life cancer of an idea having value is poison. It's life cancer. We're going to talk about that today. Before we do, let us go ahead and talk about today's sponsors of the day. Sponsor day number one today is me. Yes, it's actually me and Tom with Home Food Systems. HomeFoodSystems.com is where you can take really awesome courses to learn how to build your homestead up into a food production machine. Again, homefoodsystems.com says what it does and does what it says. We have three courses available at Home Food Systems. One of them's free. No reason not to take it. Permaculture principle-based design course. We also have one on cover crops and one on making bioreactor compost. Billy Bond, who spent a lot of money on his education and a lot of money on his son's education, took both my bioreactor compost course and my cover crop course and said in both of those courses, he learned more of practical value than a soils course that he paid over $4,000 for. You could take both of those courses for $120 and still take the other one for free and get three courses for $120. If you've not taken any courses at homefoodsystems.com, consider getting by there today. If nothing else, take the principle-based design course. See what it's all about. And the free one, I didn't cut any corners, guys. It is in-depth. It maybe isn't as long as the other two, but exams, certification at the end, all of it. Check it out today at homefoodsystems.com. Next up today, JM Bullion. Now, you talk about a long-term sponsor and friend in the podcast world. JM Bullion's been with us at least 13 years. And I know that because we moved into this house almost 13 years ago. And I had them as a sponsor right about the same time. So about 13 years, this company has sponsored this show. It is one of the best places there is in the world to buy silver and gold online. They have better pricing than Monex, Apmex, Lear Capital, take your pick. I have a direct line into the president if there's ever a problem. All your orders ship free. And if you're an MSB member, they do a discount. What more could you want? Check them out today at jmbullion.com. And with that, I am ready to dive right on into today's subject. And this is going to be kind of, it's a Just Jack show, as you usually get on the money, but it's really kind of Just Jack talking to you, kind of like you're a friend or a buddy or a customer, a client, something like that, that wants to know, how do I get this idea off zero? How do I get into the world of getting production? But then I realized something when you started talking that you had no intention of actually doing it. Or you intend to do it, but you've taken not a single step toward actually doing it. And this is a very common thing. And we have to start out with, the elephant in the room is the word idea. And I have always said, and I get real heavy pushback sometimes from people, and they're generally the worst offenders in breaking this law of life. And that's why they feel the need to push back. Your idea is fucking worthless. Okay. As it sits as an idea, it's fucking worthless. Ideas themselves are fucking worthless. Now, what somebody will say, but you have to have an idea before you have something you can execute. Correct. But until the execution begins, your idea is worthless. You want me to prove it? Here's an idea. A pill you can give your dog. You give your dog this pill once a year, costs $5, it has no side effects, and it stops your dog from shedding. He only needs it once a year, and your dog will never shed again. What's the value of that if you could pull it off? Billions. Here's another idea. A car battery that will last 25 years without ever having any maintenance or recharge necessary, no matter the weather conditions, and you can produce it for $5 a battery and sell it for $50. Okay, what's the value of that? Hundreds of billions of dollars, because that would translate into batteries for freaking electric cars that would last longer than the life of the vehicle itself, right? So those are two wonderful ideas. How about a technology that allows your vehicle to levitate off the ground and fly to your friend's house with no real modification? You get a little box about the size of a thumb drive for a computer. You plug it into your car and it turns into a levitation device, right? Now, what you're going to say is, Jack, those are all stupid because we don't have anywhere near the technology capable of doing it. We may never will. Yeah, but they're ideas. The reason I'm going to the extreme with this is because that shows you right there, the idea itself doesn't mean anything. And it never did. Ideas are worse than worthless. They're actually a negative if that's all they are or all they're going to be. I literally have to push ideas out of my fucking head on a daily basis. One of the reasons I give away so many ideas on this show is because ideas with action can be very valuable. You have to put the two things together. You have a car but no gas, it's fucking a paperweight. You have to put gas in the car, then it can go somewhere. You have a gun and no ammunition, it's a fucking paperweight. It's an expensive barter item. It's a very expensive club. It's a good way to get shot if somebody thinks you have bullets in it, you point at them and you don't, and they have a gun and they have bullets in theirs. But by itself, it's just fucking useless. right? It has to have the other piece to go with it. An idea without action is useless. And so I'll give those ideas away because with an audience this size, somebody out there might grab on it and do something with it. And so why don't you do something? Why don't you follow your own advice? I am following my advice. The things that I act on are things like this podcast, other things that interest me that feed into this podcast. So when I get an idea, like you could cobble these three things together and build a service business out of it, I know full well I'm not going to do it. It's not life cancer for me because I don't sit around saying one day, man, that's when it's life cancer. I don't ever think I'm going to do the thing that I came up with because it's not my core business. See, I already did this years ago. I did this before you ever heard my name, most of you. There's a few of you that actually knew who I was before the show, and they're still around, and that's really humbling. But there's most of the people that know me from the podcast have no knowledge of me other than what's publicly available to my life prior to June 20th, 2008. You know me from that point forward. By the time I did that, I'd already done this. I'd already built multiple companies. I'd already built multiple products. I've already done multiple things. And in that, I learned the successful people say no frequently. And that'll feed into kind of my next thing with people pitching me with their freaking ideas. But the reality is ideas are so limitless, so infinite, that a person who has a lot of ideas, like myself, we nearly need to push ideas out of our head so they don't get in the way as clutter to the few that we actually have the time and the resources and the money to execute on. So when people tell me, well, I have 10 ideas and they can all crush it, fucking take them, put them on a wall, throw a dart blindfold at whichever one the dart comes closest to do that if you mean what you're saying. Right? Because you're not going to do 10 simultaneously. You're not going to do 2 simultaneously. So pick one and prove it. And if it fails, then take what you learned from that one and pick another one and go do that one. Because the idea itself is useless. And in fact, it's worse than useless. It can be clutter. And I get this all the time. I get it a lot less now than I did, let's say, 10 years ago, because I've beat up on people for it so much. People are like, I don't want to send jack shit about an idea anymore. But new people show up at least once or twice a week. I have this really great idea. And I'm going to tell you that the second I read the word idea in your email, unless I really know you and there's some sort of back and forth already going on between us, fucking delete, right? Delete. Like, because what it means when you tell me you have an idea is you haven't done a fucking thing. You haven't done the square root of fuck all to actually execute the idea yet. And it's amazing what people will ask for. Sometimes it's like, I'd like to come on the show and talk about my idea. Well, great. Go do your idea. At least get it started. At least have some sort of prototype or framework or working system or something actually that does something other than just, I have an idea and we can talk about that. You can fill out a guest form and pitch me on your thing versus your idea. Because I'm not, well, I want to get you on so I can get somebody else to help. No. You've done nothing. You haven't even made a crude prototype. Piss off for now. It's not like I don't like you. I just know I'm wasting my time and my energy and the number of show spots for somebody to be interviewed. That's a finite resource. We do one interview a week. I take a few weeks off. You're at about 48 of those a year. That's a pretty limited quantity of interview spots, isn't it? So you don't get on just because you have an idea. Sometimes I get, will you share it on social media? Do you have something? Because I probably will. But if you want me to share your idea as, look, this guy named Chad sent me an email and he has an idea. Probably not. But that's pretty much. But the ones that really get me are the ones like they legit ask in an expected way. They think they're going to get a yes. Like, I want you to help me develop it. I want you to help me put a team together. And the best one, I want you to fund it. You want me to fund it like an angel investor? Where's your business plan? They never have one. Not only have they not tried to make a prototype or build anything or get something off the ground, they haven't even put together what you would take to an angel investor if you knew what one was and said, here's my business plan, here's KPIs, here's market research. The thing is, that wouldn't work on me either. The reason I ask you for one is so you'll shut up and go away. Because today, with ChatGPT or Gemini or Grok or whatever, you could spin up a business plan in 10 minutes. So if you haven't done that, then I know you're not serious. I know that this is just some sort of what I call intellectual masturbation. And again, this is more common than you can imagine in my email box. I probably won't get any of these for like a month now, but then it'll start again. And it's average, I would say, this far into it, where I'm known for having this attitude, it's still 2 to 3 times a week that I get something like this. I got this car, and it'll run on water, man. And that's a real one. Now, you didn't say it like Stephen Hyde from 70's Show, but I actually figured it out, and I just need to get on the air and talk about it. I'm like, listen, man, if you can make a car run on fucking water, you don't need me at all. There's no way you need me. And again, that was a real example. And this is true whether it's an idea or not, right? When you ask for help without taking action, you are really likely to get a no. Not just from people like me, and you think maybe I'm arrogant because of the way I'm talking today. There's some theatrics here. I'm trying to make this interesting and entertaining and educational altogether. But I mean like the average person. I mean, I can think of a story Joel Salatin told many, many years ago before anybody knew who he was, when he was just a farmer, before he was writing books and doing speaking engagements for $6,500 a pop. When the only people that knew him were like in his local market, but they were buying food from him. And he was taking certain products to this, I don't remember exactly the situation, but instead of going to his farm, he was taking a certain amount of product to like a local farm-to-table store or something like that, though it wasn't probably called that back then. And his one working vehicle, because he didn't have shit for money, man. He was a poor dirt farmer. And his one working vehicle shit the bed. And one of his customers gave him a car. It wasn't a great car. It was actually a Cadillac, but it had seen better days, is the way he put it. But they just said, here, I don't want you to go away. Now, that wasn't a guy, you know, posting on Nextdoor, my car broke down. Will somebody give me a car? He was trying. And the people that saw him trying wanted to help him. When I first got to Texas back in 1993, my little piece of shit car blew the timing belt on 635 LBJ freeway going slightly uphill right at rush hour. If you're from the area, you know how bad that is. If you're not from the area, think of the biggest city you know well and think of the one place you really wouldn't want that to happen. That's where I was at. I got out of my car. I'm pushing it. Not a lot uphill, but a little bit uphill. It's a Mustang too. It's not that big. But I'm still, and people are blowing the horn at me, like, speed up. What am I going to do, break into a sprint? Well, it only took, like, I was pissed. I'm like, Texas sucks. I can't believe people. But it took a couple seconds before somebody pulled up behind me with a truck and said, get in and I'll push you, and push me off the road. Now, if I was standing in the middle of the road, my thumb in my ass, instead of trying to do something about it, that guy probably would have drove right by. And I could give you, I'm not going to keep going, but I could give you 100 examples like that, either in my life or the lives of others where I've seen when somebody's trying, sometimes they don't even ask for help. They don't even ask for assistance. People show up. This microphone way over here, this is like the one I use for the other computer. This microphone was given to me by a listener many years ago when I first started doing the show at home. And I really wasn't really sure what mic to get first. I'd gone from using a little portable recorder to recording on a machine, right? And I was like fiddling around with trying to find a decent mic without like investing, you know, tens of thousands of dollars in a full studio. I just wanted a good plug-in mic. Guy's like, I know the mic for you. I got one. I'm not using it. Just mailed it to me, unsolicited, right? Because I was doing something, because it was action. Action breeds support. Nothing creates success like success, right? When you have a little success, it's easier to get more. And when you get more, it's easier to get more. But when you take the idea to someone, you pitch someone an idea, like especially if you're actually going to go try to pitch like an angel investor or a venture capitalist or something, they don't invest in ideas. They invest in products and people. And if the person is worth the investment, they've done something before they pitch the idea. I'm sorry, that's just the way that it is. I don't get a lot of the whole, like, here's our business plan, VC type pitch anymore because I'm almost impossible to get to that way at this point, right? But when I worked with Neil for about 6 years, we had somebody come to us like that. I mean, literally one of the companies, that was kind of its purpose, at least in some ways. So we had somebody once a week coming in to pitch us on something, and 95% of them were worse than the worst person you've ever seen on a show like Shark Tank. As soon as you, like, they would do this presentation, it all sounded wonderful, But as soon as you would ask the most basic questions, they just fall apart. They had no idea. You know, they'd say their market size is estimated at, you know, $8 billion or whatever. Well, where'd you get that number? Oh, that's from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Okay, whatever. Yeah. What's your market potential? What? Or when they were asking for $100,000, you say, so you're valuing your company based on the equity you want to give up in it at $2 million. What? I didn't say that. Well, yeah, you did. You priced 10% of your company at this much money, and therefore 100% of your company is worth that much. They had no idea. And these are people with degrees. I mean, they had good business plans, but no product, no focus, no execution. And every single one of them, Neil and I would just look at each other and go, nope, bye. There's no group of sharks here. There's just two guys listening to you going, no, we're not putting our money in this. We're not putting our effort in this. This is reality. And it's the same whether you're talking to a podcast or you're trying to get some traction on a product with, or you're talking to a VC or an angel investor. It's the same attitude. Like, what have you done? You're not coming on my podcast to talk about your idea. You're going to come on my podcast, if I let you on, to talk about what you're doing. If you don't have something you can point to, you haven't done anything. I mean, my 14-year-old grandson will come up with an idea, and in 2 hours, he's got a prototype. Sometimes it's a clunky piece of shit. Sometimes it actually works. But if he can do it, I expect that you can do it before you ask for a favor from somebody. I had a solid idea once that fits this, and I've had more than my fair share of these ideas I never did anything with. This was actually a pretty good one, though. And the thing is, I didn't become idea guy at the time. Like, one day, man, I'm going to do this and I'm going to be rich type of thing. No, it was just more a passing idea. And I really had no way to get enough traction to do it. I was young. I'm talking like 22, I want to say, at the oldest when this happened. Could have been 23. But if I was, I was just 23. I had moved here to Texas after getting out of the Army. And a friend of mine named Brad, who I served in the Army with, had bought a Ford Ranger pickup when he got out himself. He got out a few months before me, said, hey, come on down here. I need a roommate type of thing, you know, just Army buds. And somewhere in all that, he comes home one day and he is pissed. I'm like, what's the matter, man? He goes, well, somebody needed a tailgate and they didn't have one, but I did. And, you know, those trucks, you could just basically open the tailgate, unhook a couple cables and lift it out. They're just super easy to steal because back then they didn't lock. So I got this idea about an aftermarket product, a retrofit product that would work for any tailgate. And it was actually a pretty simple idea. And if I had even known where to start with this, I could have actually developed the product really quickly. Basically, it was the idea to create something that would create tension in the tailgate, basically a spreading device that had a lock. And so you wouldn't have to do any major retrofitting of the vehicle. You would just put this in between the seam and turn it with a key, kind of like a key for, oh, I don't know, like a soda machine. It would have worked. It was actually probably pretty marketable. And it wasn't maybe a year or two later that when you went to, you know, a truck dealership and you walked along the back, every tailgate had a lock sitting right next to the latch where you could just lock your own. It was integrated. So you say, well, that idea was time limited because there was an obvious solution to a problem and the manufacturers did it themselves. And now we're talking over 20, you know, we're talking 30 years, right? Right, 30 years ago. So there's not a lot of trucks left that have this concern or problem. And the ones that are that old, there's probably not a lot of people looking for a tailgate off. And since it's like so many trucks have locking tailgates now, no one's really making a living off of this, which they were at the time. Yeah, but if I would have done something and marketed it, probably had 10 years in it. Right? Does that mean that Ford and Chevy and Toyota stole my idea? No. I even had a simpler idea. Like, I just don't know if it could have been a product. And that's basically an eye hook in both the cab and the thing along the rail of the truck. And then a piece of cable, like a cable for a bike lock and a bike lock on it. And you just wouldn't be able to lower it down unless you took the lock off. Like, there was a couple ways to do it, but nobody stole my idea. That's the most loser language shit I've ever heard. I had this idea, man, and if I would have done it first, you weren't going to do it first. And if you had done it first, you still wouldn't have got anywhere. Edison didn't make the first fucking light bulb. Ford didn't make the first car. Marconi didn't make the first thing that really could transmit sound across the air. And plenty of people had ideas for those things before they ever happened.
The person that executes the idea and gets the product to market in a way that the market accepts, that's the person who wins, at least in business. So I had a solid idea. In the end, it was not even worth nothing. It was negative. I should get like a negative 10 for that idea because it was legitimate. I didn't do anything with it. Now, it can be excused. I was 22 years old, and I had other things on my mind at the time. I wasn't the person that I am today. But at least I knew not to be the guy that's like, I have this idea, man, and one day I'm going to – like, that is just life cancer. Here's the reality of how an idea can, when executed, make a person wealthy. I think the guy's name was Gary Dahl. I want to actually check this because I don't want to say his name wrong. But I'm pretty sure his first name was Gary. And Gary Dahl. Gary Dahl, D-A-H-L. Some of you know that name and some of you don't. Most of you probably don't. Gary Dahl was the guy that invented the pet rock. Now, many people today know of the pet rock, but you weren't around when the pet rock was a thing. I was a really little kid. I'm talking like not quite in kindergarten yet, I guess. You know, like 4 or 5 years old, but just enough to remember it being a thing, just barely. So the pet rock was basically a painted rock with some googly eye bullshit on it, right? And, you know, they sold for like a buck. They came in a little box with care instructions for your pet rock. It was a gimmick. The guy made $1 million. 229 Nick is right. The dude became a millionaire from the pet rock. Now, there was two things working against this idea as a long-term product. Number one, you can't patent gluing googly eyes and painting a rock and selling it for a dollar in a... And I'm telling you, what I remember as a kid, these things were fucking everywhere. You went into a convenience store, a gas station, they had pet rocks for sale. Initially, they were all Gary's with the little collateral that went with it. Because what it was is a joke gift, right? You gave somebody this little box and it had these little pictures on it and had a care guide and how to take care of your pet rock. And it was funny. It was like it's something that, you know, it kind of predates when Spencer's Gifts was huge in the 80s. But it's kind of like a Spencer's Gift thing. So he comes out with this idea, makes $1 million plus off of it, ends up on all the like big time night shows like The Late Show or Johnny Carson or whatever it was back then. And he ends up like eventually it just fades away. He tries to come up with things like canned earthquakes or something like that. And none of it really works. So people think he made the pet rock, he made his $1 million, and then basically he went away. The guy was actually a very successful professional advertiser and marketer way late in life. He only passed away like, I want to say 10-ish years ago, somewhere in the range of 10 to 15 years ago. And he was active until about 10 years before that. He was actually deeply involved early on, early .com days, web advertising and things like that. He was not idea guy. He was execution guy. He got shit done. The thing was, he couldn't come up with another gimmicky thing like that. He had to apply it to real world things. So the thing with gimmicks is they hit and they're a fad. They go for a time and they go away. It doesn't mean you shouldn't do them, but you should have a plan what to do next. And it's probably not another gimmick. Buy any Beanie Babies lately, right? What was the little freaking pets, right? Basically, the pet rock was redone. My kid had one. I just can't remember what they were called. They were like a little keychain sized tchotchke thing with a little creature inside it, and you had to feed it and take care of it and shit. It was the same gimmick redone with electronics. That also did. I haven't seen one of those in a long time. Remember all of that? Right? But those things, as goofy as they were, they made somebody money because that person, you might have a better long term lasting idea, but they did something and you did. That's why makes sense to think about execution. Now, even great doable ideas are worthless without execution. Remember when I started this off to prove ideas were worthless? I'm like, well, what about a car that levitates? Well, that's an idea. If the idea, if Gigapet, Aaron Sweet is right, the Gigapet. My son had one of those. And there was another one too, that's the other one. Tamagotchi, right? They were like the same, like GoBots and Transformers, right? But here's the thing. I was using things like, you know, building a warp drive for your computer to, your computer could actually go to the other side of the world, get a hard copy uploaded and come back to you. Or matter energy transporter. Hey, you know what? If ideas are so great, what about replicators like they have on Star Trek, right? The idea itself, unless it's executed, doesn't mean anything. And the reason I went to these extreme ideas is because if the greatest idea in the world doesn't matter because we can't do it, then your idea that can be done doesn't matter because you didn't do it. It won't matter. It's not going to matter until you or somebody else does it. And odds are most good, doable ideas fit into two categories. One, there's an awful lot of people already thinking about doing it. But if you get there first, you can have some first mover advantage, and that's very valuable. But more often the case, somebody's already doing it. You just don't know about it. Here's another example. Like, so you really want me to delete your fucking email at warp speed? Send me an email that says, I have this really great idea, Jack, but before I tell you what it is, I need you to sign a non-disclosure agreement. Delete, gone. Like, I can't be bothered with you. Now, if you tell me I have an existing system in place, I have customers, and I want your thoughts on this. I think it can be really valuable, and we already have something going on. And if you want to know more, I need you to sign an NDA. Well, maybe, if I'm interested. I'm probably not, but maybe. But when you have an idea and I need an NDA, no, get out of here. The last time I signed an NDA, I was between moving from Pennsylvania back here to Texas after I quit working for Fluke Networks. And I did some, like, freelance consulting in that period. And this guy that I knew through a leads group comes to me, and he wants me to sign an NDA. And I'm like, fine, whatever. You know, like, you're right here. Like, I'm not sitting in a computer and I'm going to have to go through all this bullshit. Like, okay, I'll sign it. And then you can tell me about your crap. So I do. And he tells me about his idea. And he had a business plan, right? He had not laid down a line of code, nor found a person to lay down a line of code. It was just a concept. Here was the concept. Now, this is, to be fair to the guy, a long time ago. This would have been about 2003, okay? So not quite what 22 years ago, I guess, would be about what it was. His idea was a website to shop for apartments, but the website wasn't just going to help you find an apartment. It's going to tell you about the amenities, the community, the things nearby, et cetera. And of course, there's 100 sites like that today, you know, like apartments.com. But he tells me about this, and while he's telling me about it, we're at this function where there's, you know, even back then they had this thing called Wi-Fi. So I've got my laptop out and I'm checking to see, like, does this exist? And I find a few companies already doing it. And the one that was already, like, first mover, heavy advantage, highly developed is Apartment Finder, right? Which is now apartmentfinder.com. And Apartment Finder has been in business since, like, the early 80s. And so they were already in this business. So when the internet came, they just put the model online. So I'm like, you asked me to sign an NDA so that no one would give away your idea, right? And your idea is here's, and when I turned the computer around, and when I showed him the website, his whole face sunk. All the color went out of his face. He really thought he had come up with something that no one else had ever even thought of, and he was going to get rich because he came up with an idea. Now, the thing is, that man, if he was a serious business person, should have been overjoyed that there was a competitor already in place. When you have a competitor in a space, you know what you have? A market. When you say, I have no competitors in my idea space, right? Well, then, you know, maybe if you really do have an earth-changing idea, a society-shifting idea, and you really can execute it, then maybe you have the ultimate first-mover advantage in being the actual first person, right? Like, maybe you have that. But mostly what you probably have is, I guarantee you other people have thought about this and fucked around with it, and there's just not a market for it. And unless you're going to be able to build the market that doesn't exist, you're actually better off competing in an existing space, just being one of a few fish instead of being one of a thousand fish. That's how first mover market. So usually the idea the person has either already exists and somebody's already doing it, or plenty of people have thought about it and there either is not enough market to get it done, or there's a techno hurdle that for now is preventing it from getting done. And the only way that you're going to get money from someone to cross that technical bridge, right, is to have done something first. You notice one of the things they ask in that show, Shark Tank, how much of your money have you put in to your business? And when the answer is zero, it's like a wah wah, and you're done. Doesn't even matter if it's a good business or a good idea. Like, so I have someone in front of me that has so little faith in their own attempt to execute something, they won't put any of their own money in. Yeah, no, not doing it. Because you want me to put my money in, but you won't put your money in. And if you haven't at least put the time into development, and you want my money and my time, and you've contributed neither, you're going to do it once I give you money. And that usually means that most of these proposals just saying that you plan on paying yourself a salary while you work on it out of my money. That's not why investors, they don't invest money so you pay a salary to yourself. They might invest money for you to pay a salary to a developer or an engineer or something, but not for you. You're the founder. You're supposed to suffer. You're supposed to get in the trench with me if I'm the investor. If you're not willing to do that, I'm not, and no good investor is going to be investing. But the good doable idea that is not acted on is actually worse than the idea of I'm going to make a levitation device. Because in your heart, you know, no, you're not. Like, I'll give you another example of something that nobody ever built, but somebody built something like it, like just a few years later. I want to take you back to about, let's say, 1983, 84. If you were around back then, if you were a kid in school like I was, you know what I'm about to say is absolute fact. Every boy, girls too, but especially boys, had probably two things in their life, unless they just, the family didn't have the money for either. One was an Atari 2600 game system at home. Like every freaking, and if you didn't have one, your friend did. And whoever had it, that's where all the friends went to play video games. River Raid, Pac-Man, Space Invaders, all that shit. Galaga, right? Everybody had that, right? And the other thing all the boys had was a Casio fucking watch with a calculator built into it. So we thought that was a fucking computer. And for the time, it kind of was, right? And of course, the teacher would always take the Casio away when the math quiz came out, right? But we had those two things. So you're talking about fourth, fifth grade kids here, right? Immediately think, you know what we need? We need a watch you can play video games on with little cartridges like the Atari. That was our idea. And we all thought we were geniuses for coming up with this idea. About 5 years later, I think it was 1989, Nintendo came out with the Game Boy, which was like the first really small, portable, cartridge-based, change-your-game video game. Up until then, we had like the thing where you squirt water and try to get the rings to hook on the pins. That was this handheld video game, right? There's no video. If you don't get it, I'm sorry, you're too young. But we didn't have anything like that. And then Nintendo came out with the Game Boy, and I think Tetris was like the first big game on it. And like we all looked at it because by then we're like in high school. We're like juniors, not seniors in high school going, what the fuck? They took our idea. Well, I can forgive that in a 16, 17-year-old kid, not a grown-ass man, right? The idea didn't matter. Now, the idea that we had was undoable because nobody's done it yet, and it would be really stupid to play a video game on a watch that size with cartridges. Like, but the idea, by scaling it up just a little bit and making it still portable, pocket size, was totally doable. None of us kids would have had the technology and capability to actually build that product. So when you have the idea, you also need to look, is the idea reasonable for me in my situation to at least get started? Because I'll tell you how you can get money. If you can build a working prototype, you can get money. If you can build a working prototype, you don't have to go VC anymore. You can go the Kickstarter, GoFundMe route and raise initial capital from market. Now, there's a weakness in that. And I'm wondering if anybody knows here what the weakness is. Well, the weakness is when I go to you, like let's say I go to Liberty Garden and Art by Lee Murphy and Jim S., who are all in the chat. They're just the most recent three comments. That's why I'm pulling their names out. And they were like a group of sharks, venture capitalists. And I go to them and I make a pitch and I say, this is what I've done. This is where I'm at, et cetera. And they say, we'll give you $1 million. We'll each give you $333,000 in change each. And we'll give you $1 million for 20% of your company and take the money and build the thing. I get to capitalize all that as an investment and I pay no tax on it. I don't pay any tax on it. When you take money in from like a GoFundMe, yes, you can deduct your production costs and everything from the final delivery, but you have to be really careful. Let's say you launch your GoFundMe in November and you get all your money by December. And you don't actually go into operations until January, February, start shipping product. Then all of your cost is in a different tax year than your expense, your revenue, and you're paying 100% tax on that. That can be a really bad thing. I've learned that the hard way over the years too. Okay, because I've not with GoFundMe, but I've made mistakes like that of bringing in revenue with fundraising that wasn't really investor fundraising, but pre-sales, and not having the expenses to offset them. That really sucks. So there's a weakness there, but if you know it, you can build to it. So there's never been a better time, but no one's going to really invest in you until you can show them that you've done something. You can't even get on Kickstarter with an idea. You have to have something. If it's a physical product, you have to have a prototype or they will not approve the campaign, nor should they. But I want to move on to something else because up to this point, you may have gotten the inference or the belief that this only applies to like entrepreneurs, business people, or at least in your profession, right? An engineer working for a company, this could apply to you the way we've been talking about it. But most people don't realize that this is just a version of I'll do it next week, I'll do it tomorrow, I'll do it next month, I'll do it next year. That's all it really is. And it's life cancer. And it's critical, therefore, for everybody, and it's really critical for the entrepreneur, even in this other way that I'm going to explain it, okay, where it becomes life cancer. Saying I'm going to and never doing it, or not doing it when you expend more effort talking about doing a thing than it actually takes to do the thing. This is a terrible pattern to set in your life. And once you set the pattern, it will permeate everything. That's the person that says, like, going to this level. I think I'm going to get up and I'm going to go to the refrigerator and make a sandwich. And 20 minutes later, there is no sandwich, but they're telling you they're going to do it again. Right. And I've actually met people like this. Okay. Some of them are actually kind of close to me that do this type of stuff. Right. I'm going to mow their lawn. Right. And here's the thing. When you tell me that, assuming I care about the thing you're going to do anyway, I no longer care about the thing. Let's assume that we somehow work together. Right. And I'm going to take care of finishing the report on XYZ. Right. And we're both employees. You tell me that. Okay. Great. You know what? I'm going to think about that again. Never. Assuming I think you meant it when you said it, why would I even fucking think about it again? Whether I work with you and we're both responsible for it, but you've said I'm taking care of this, you take care of that. I'm done. I'm not worried about that. You said you were going to do it. If I'm your boss, I assume it will be done by the time you said so because you told me voluntarily you were going to do it. And so when I was running companies, if you told me the next day you were going to do something, you told me you were going to do the day before, especially when I never asked, you're getting real close to out the fucking door, Jack. I mean, serious, you're getting real close to being fired because I don't have time for that shit. And this permeates your life. And you might think it's a little fucking thing, but let me explain how it compounds. And I want to explain it with something kind of take this thing and then put it in reverse to where this can be a positive and it becomes a negative. And so in search engine marketing, which is where you take a website or an individual page on a website, and you say, I want to get this page to rank for two or three terms that people search for on Google. Of course, that's a dying market, but it's been the market for 25 years. That's called search engine optimization. And if you're trying to sell something like, let's say, cell phones, right, then cell phone would be an obvious target. And there's like, 2.5 million searches a year for cell phones. And so it's a highly competitive niche with a ton of traffic if you pull it off. And then there'll be other terms that it'll be less and less, but there's still a lot. And then all of a sudden you'll get down to these terms that have 100, 200, 50, 65, 30, 40, 5, 6, 10 searches a month for these longer terms like cell phone service in Peoria, Illinois. I don't know. I'm just making shit up to make a point. Well, that's called the long tail. So while everybody's focused on the big, if you had a chart, right, a graph, you have this, it starts out really high and then it comes down, comes down, comes down, comes down, comes down. And it gets down so low versus the big ones, it almost looks like a flat line and it just goes way out. The funny thing is if you take that long tail right where it kind of pinches off, right where the inflection point is, right, like a key point in a design system in a landscape, right where it makes that inflection point and then the tail thins out, you take that tail and stand it up, it outweighs like the top 20 biggest terms. There's more of it. So a business model we used to use in this space was we would do deep keyword research and find all of these long tails and develop individual pages for two or three at a time and then develop optimization. And we could own them very easily because there wasn't that much competition for them. And a lot of the bigger companies with big ad budgets, you would just buy them with AdWords. So if you had it organically, you were kind of in the pool by yourself and you could bring in massive traffic to your site or a client's site with this long tail. Okay. You see how that adds up. Okay. Now let's look at it the other way. You make a habit of about a dozen times a day stating you're going to do something that you then do not do or do not do in a reasonable time between stating it and doing it. It doesn't seem like that big of a deal. Well, that would be about, what, 72 times a month? I did the math, and it works out to thousands of times a year. It works out to, like, some ridiculous over your lifetime, like 56,000 times over a normal human's working life that they defer something that they should do based on the average number of times that people do it on a daily basis. How can you not expect that to erode your potential across your life? And remember when we talk about your dash? Your dash, for those who've never heard me say this before, is when you die someday on a stone somewhere, a plaque or a little nameplate or in an obituary online or in a newspaper, they're going to put your name and they're going to put down, like in my case, 1972 dash and the year you died. That dash is you. I served very briefly under a captain who, right after I got to the unit, he actually left and we had a change of command ceremony. I don't even remember his name, but I remember his speech. He told us that. I was like 19 years old. He didn't call it a dash. He called it a hyphen. And he said, "Mend that hyphen is you. Do something with it." And again, I was 19 years old. I will never forget that. I've made it a theme of what I teach on here. So if you're going to spend your dash, right, that hyphen, they will stick between born and died. And 60,000 times while that dash is burning, you're going to say you're going to do something only to not do it or to do something that should have been done today, next week, and create the cascade effect, because the cascade effect is real. The cascade effect, to see it in another way, you go to the airport. There's nothing wrong with your airplane. There's not going to be any weather problems at 3 o'clock when your plane is supposed to take off. It is 1 p.m. right now, and you look, and like all the flights that are supposed to be taking off now are delayed or canceled. And then you look at your flight and some flights around your flight, and it says on time. The dumbass has, like, if you travel regularly for business like I used to, you could see that person and you just laugh at them, like, "Oh, you poor bastard," right? They're all happy. "Oh, look, my flight." No, it's not. Because what's going to happen is they just have the cancellations and delays have just started and the cascade hasn't come yet. Because all of these planes have to get off the ground today. So they're going to start pushing things out. So you're not leaving on time because somebody else screwed up earlier in the day or weather intervenes, a God event happened, right? So, but in your own life, you're that person. And when you do that 4 or 5 times today, and say you're going to do something that you don't do then, whether you say it out loud as a prognostication, "I am going to go make a sandwich," or you think in your head, it doesn't matter. Your mind, your mental computer takes it in the same way. And what that ends up doing is over time, as you keep doing it, it becomes more prevalent because your brain doesn't take your declaration that you're going to do something seriously anymore. You're now programming the computer to basically throw out commands, "I am going to." Like, the computer won't even take it seriously until you start. I don't want to pick on my wife because I'll get in fucking trouble, but I'll put it to you this way. When my wife says, "We're leaving now," until I hear keys jingling and I see her heading to the door, I don't move. And I don't do it to be mean to her. I do it to be nice to her. Because if I get up and go to that fucking door and I go outside and I start the car, get the air conditioning going, open the gate and open the door for her, And I've done it as slow as I can, moving at old man speed, and it's been 5 minutes, and that door's still closed, I become grumpy. I become impatient. I become like, "I thought we were leaving." So I just learned a long time ago that when most women say, "We're leaving now," we're not. Now, if you're at a cocktail party and somebody pissed her off, we're leaving now. But when you're leaving the house and they have to get ready to leave, and I'm talking about, like, we're not going to, like, a fine dance or something or a fine dining experience. Like, literally, I'm ready right now the way I'm dressed doing this podcast. That doesn't matter. She's going to get ready. And there's always a few more things to do after the declaration that we're going to leave. So I'm programmed that way in response to the female declaration I'm going to leave, because I know it doesn't matter. And I'm not even picking on it. I get why women do it. I'm not picking on you women. I swear to God. I love my wife. I ain't picking on her, so I definitely ain't picking on you. Probably don't even know you. Now, Lee, I know you, right? So maybe I'm picking on you. But the rest of you gals that are in the live chat, I'm not picking on you, okay? So, but I've been programmed that way. I now know that there is no meaning to leaving until there is direct movement toward the door. When you do this to yourself continuously with little things that don't seem important, they're not the idea for a truck tailgate lock or a new web portal or a new web app, right? They're just little things. You're training your brain to be like me when my wife says we're leaving the house. It just goes, I'm going to sit on the couch and binge TikTok, or I'm going to work a little bit more on my, like, your brain's, I'm going to do something valuable with my computing power until this motherfucker actually starts to do it, which will actually slow down the time between the declaration and the action, and it becomes a cascading failure, right? Like when the grid went down back in the early 2000s, like a couple tree branches hit some power lines, and next thing you know, like half the northeastern United States was without power for a day and a half. It's like that in your life on an ongoing basis all the time. The thing is, the power doesn't actually go out. You still do things. You certainly do the things you're required to do, the things that you have to do, the things you'll get fired for not doing. So you feel like you're active. I mean, I can't tell you how many people, I work so hard. But when you break down what they do, you're like, but you're only doing the things you have to do. You're just taking a really long time to do them because you're disorganized. So you feel like you're working harder than you are. Then they get pissed. Well, don't come to me for help if you don't want a fucking answer, right? That's how I work. I analyze the situation and formulate a solution. Right. But this, you know, it bleeds into your business or work. It can't not. Then it stacks up. And instead of building momentum to do things, it hits momentum to stop things. Instead of rolling the boulder down the hill, now you're trying to roll the boulder up the hill. No wonder you're tired. And I'm going to becomes a habit that holds you back. And it turns into, it starts out as tomorrow, then it's next week, then it's next month, then it's next year, and eventually you realize it's never, and by then you're usually old and wish you didn't do it. That's why we're doing this today, because this show is about lifestyle design, which can include preparedness. We talk about how to store food and things like that. It can include growing a garden, because that way you know you have food coming and it's better for you. It's about investing, because that's thinking of your future, which is what preparedness is. It's about business, but it's also about just basic lifestyle design. This is a basic lifestyle design principle. Talk doesn't really mean anything. There's a lot of power in speaking and intention. There really is, but there is only power in speaking that intention if it's followed by an action. Now, the intention might be, I'm going to build a web app that does X, Y, and Z, right? Or I'm going to build a software product that does X, Y, and Z. Or I'm going to build a gadget that does X, Y, and Z. Or I'm going to put together a podcast that's going to interview people like X, Y, and Z, or whatever it is, right? And that might be this big overriding goal. And it might actually take time to get to a point where it's even close to looking like the declaration. But I guarantee you, the only reason that's the case is there's a lot of steps, right? So if I said something like, I am going to walk from Fort Worth, Texas, where I live, to Jacksonville, Florida, where I grew up as a kid. There's some steps to take. Now, there's a lot of physical stuff. But even before I did, like, I would have to do things like, okay, well, I'm not going to be running my business, or I'm going to have to figure out how to run my business while I'm on the road, right? Maybe I'm going to do one show a week. Like, I'm going to walk for a week and do a show at a hotel. I'm going to camp on the side of the road, but once a week, I'm going to, like, kind of like I did when I was the Appalachian Trail. Like, I'm going to spend a week on the trail and then a weekend in town and then a week on the trail and a week, like, something like that. I'm going to logistically figure that out. Who's going to take care of my home? But those are all steps. And if I made the declaration without beginning the process of figuring the answers to those out and starting to put systems in place, then the declaration means nothing. If the second after I say it, I say, I'm going to go, let's say, since it's the world of AI today, and I'm going to give all of the information I have to ChatGPT, and I'm going to say, help me figure out a way to logistically plan this, I'm in motion. But at some point, even the planning has to cease, because the planning can go on forever, because we like to intellectually masturbate, especially with other people. It's our most, it's the most popular form of mutual masturbation, intellectual. It has nothing to do with sex. It's about ideas, right? So we're going to go do this and keep it. Now, at some point, I have to take the actual first step, which is I have the equipment that I need, I have the plan in place, and I open the fucking door, and I take one step out the door, and I take another step and another step till I go out the gate, and I make a left on 9 Mile Road, and I make a right on freaking 199, and then I make a left, I guess, on 820. Hopefully I don't get killed, so I might have to think about my route, but I have to at some point start heading to Jacksonville. And if I don't take that first step, then I'll never get there. You have to start taking, if you're going to say that the statement, the idea, the declaration is powerful, it has to be immediately followed by some action. The second you delay, you're programming your brain, don't get off the couch until you hear the keys and she's heading to the door. Yeah. Right. Again, in no way am I picking on my wife, who could probably hear me right now. Okay. I'm just saying that that is a pattern in my life. You know, another pattern in my life is when I tell the kids it's time to leave at the end of the day, I'm going to deal with 5 minutes of bullshit while they're not ready to leave, even though we leave at the same time every day. That one I am picking on. Like, they're kids, though, right? But there's certain things in your life that you just know that when this thing happens that indicates that the, you know, when action A happens that indicates action B is to occur, there might be a delay between those things. And the longer the delay, the less seriously you take action A. The declaration of action A doesn't matter if it happens four times. On the fourth time, I start thinking about actually the occurrence of B. Your brain works the same way. In fact, it works a lot faster because it's a subconscious background process. And your brain is tired of your bullshit, saying you're going to do something and then boring it by not doing the thing that you said you were going to do. Now, this is not when you say, well, I want to do X, and you start asking yourself daily multiple times, how do I accomplish X? How do I accomplish X? That's okay. That's a different challenge for the brain. Now the brain's looking for a solution, but at some point you better start putting the plan into action, or the brain just calls time out and takes a smoke break, right? And maybe the kind of smoke that, you know, Cheech and Chong used to have. Like, I just need to, this motherfucker's wearing me out. This meat thing that I'm inside of, it doesn't actually do the things that it sends communications to me that it says it wants to do. So I don't take it seriously anymore. And this is the sad story of most people's lives. Almost everybody in the world, folks, had some group of big dreams that they were going to accomplish. And the sad thing is, you know, a few of them maybe were never going to happen. But most of them could have happened, or at least partially happened. And the journey towards them, even if they didn't get there, would have taken them to another level and let them find something else. But instead, they lead a completely mediocre, boring, and miserable life. There's nothing wrong with a mediocre, average life if that's what you want, and you can find true joy in it. But most of the people that I see using that as an excuse for their inaction, they're miserable. I just gave an interview last week to Tom Woods on my book, Laws of Life. And some of the comments on that video on his channel, like, this working 60 hours a week thing is just stupid, right? But it's in a comment thread about how the world is an impossible place, and my attitude is supposedly that that's your own fault, that the world's an impossible place, and you're poor because of your own decisions, not because of the situation. Well, what I really said was, the situation sucks, you are a victim, but it's still your responsibility. That's not the same thing. But then when you give the solution that I gave was, if you're in your 20s, early 30s, you should be working 60 hours a week minimum. Even if you don't have a job that will let you have overtime and you don't have a side hustle, then if you're working a 40-hour job, you should work 20 hours a week on yourself, developing your knowledge and your skills in some way to make you more valuable to others. If you can't get paid to work, work to get paid, right? That's what I said. Well, this person's worried about the experiences you're going to miss and recommends, instead of my book, you read a book called Die with Zero. Let me tell you something. It's easy to die with zero. People do it every day, and seldom are they happy about it. Seldom. And I know that book probably has a different angle, like plan out your retirement, figure out how long you're going to live, and go ahead and spend all your fucking money before you die, and leave your kids with Dak shit, right? That's also short-term time preference thinking, right? And you notice that, like, that thinking has become more prevalent as we have less and less children, and less people with children, and therefore less and less people with grandchildren, or you have a couple and they're leaving behind one kid, so they're not really worried about how much they leave. And if that kid by 40 is somewhat successful in life, they're not worried at all. No obligation felt. And this is why we vote for things, by the way, that give us something now, because we're not worried about 40 years from now, because fuck it, I'll be dead. We have shortened the time preference into the microwave era with a microwave mindset about being happy now. And then we wonder why we're sick and miserable and unhappy. If you gave somebody, let's say you had a kid, but they were old enough to look after themselves, like 17, right? And you and your wife or you and your husband were going to go on vacation for like 4 days and leave them at home and hope they don't have a Ferris Bueller type party or something like that, right? You might even think they might. So you give them some money to make sure that they, like, let's say they don't have a job yet, so you make sure they can buy groceries and shit. If they went out and spent all the money on the first day, had a party and everything was gone, and then they had to be hungry and live off, you know, I don't know, stale Doritos or whatever for the next 3 days, you'd be like, fuck it, you deserve it. And you'd think, boy, I got a lot of work to do with this young person because they can't think 4 days ahead, let alone 4 weeks ahead, let alone 4 months ahead. But then you look around you, and most of society works this way. If you look at, like, you know, the short video sites like Instagram and TikTok that all of the Gen Zs and young millennials are making content for, it's a bitch fest about why I don't have what I want right now. And when you lay down, this is a path to get what you want. They basically say, fuck you, I'm entitled to it today. This mindset is a big part of how we got there. That the idea is the thing. Since I have this brilliant idea, and I must be a brilliant person because I have the brilliant idea, therefore I'm entitled to something even though I haven't done anything yet. And this is where I push back on the idea that you don't deserve things, right? I tell you what, you and I say this with a straight face, and I mean it. There's just another shoe that drops on the other side of it if you haven't heard it before. You deserve what you want. And what's funny is a lot of these people that walk around with that attitude, the second you tell them that, they're like, oh, wait, no, I don't know. Like, there is a piece of them that's human that realizes that is too much. It can't be that, and it isn't, because you deserve what you want. The other shoe is you just haven't done the work yet. And the work, depending on what you want, scales with the desire. In other words, if I want something that's a little bit, then I got to do a little bit of work to get it. If I want something like complete and total lifestyle freedom, debt freedom, the ability to travel, all the things that the youth say they want today, then the work to get that, it's a fucking lot. And that means while you're working your fucking ass off in your 20s, you need to be thinking about your late 30s. You need a longer time preference, right? Enough. One of the reasons I push Bitcoin so heavily, it's not just because I think it's the best investment you can make. It's because if you start down that path, and I don't just mean I DCA Bitcoin every week and I treat it like an alternate 401k. Like, that's not what I mean. You start reading books like the Fiat Standard, the Bitcoin Standard, Broken Money, et cetera. It will become impossible for you to maintain a short time preference. Honestly, doing the research behind Bitcoin is more important than buying it. If you do the research, you will start buying it. But if you start buying it, you won't necessarily do the research. You'll probably freak out because you have a whole $50 you invested in it that went up to $150, and now it dropped to $90, and you had to sell it before it went to zero because you had no idea why you were doing what you were doing. When you actually do the research on what's wrong with our monetary system, and then you switch over to what a proper managed monetary system would look like, you realize that every problem we have is about thinking about, well, how much will this company sell in this quarter versus will this product this company makes be the product of choice for the next 100 years? That's how we used to think. Not even that long, even in the 1970s, we were still thinking that way. But in 71, of course, is when it broke. and the full ramifications weren't felt until about the mid-90s. Why do you think they set the movie The Matrix in 1999 at the peak of humanity? Because that's where fiat had crested with as much as you could get away with, and it's all been down fucking hill since then. You can't change fiat money, but you can change how you act and what you do, and you can stop behaving the way the fiat watch going back and forth to hypnotize you teaches you to behave. Because the thinking behind that is a road to death economically. It really is. You have to shift from thinking to doing. Thinking's important. Doing is where the rubber meets the road. That's where you start to actually test the thought. And I'm going to tell you that it's a very good thing that it's hard. It's a very good thing that it's hard. And here's what I mean by that. The market is the ultimate gatekeeper against stupidity, wasted capital, and wasted time, and wasted effort and energy. The market is the gatekeeper of that. This is why fiat money plus government is so horrible, because they destroy the gatekeeping that is the market. So what I mean by that is, if you have an idea, and either it's a dumb idea that's never going to work, or it's poorly executed, then the market will reject it. And the loss will be limited to you and the people that got involved with you. And that's it. You have to fish or cut bait. It's over. Yeah? Okay. If the government decides something's a good idea and fires up the printing press to fund it and creates a department of government to oversee it, we're all stuck with it. We can't get rid of it. We've seen that, right? Like, some of the shit we need to get rid of. Everybody goes, we need to get rid of this. The congressman says, we need to get rid of this. And you say, okay, Mr. Congressman, here's a bill that gets rid of it. Vote yes. No, I'm going to vote no. Like, once that happens, it's very difficult to get rid of shit. But, you know, when the market rejects it, and when it has to be funded with capital and energy from a going concern, it goes away fast. Anybody seen a Zune lately? Right? Remember the Zune? Some of you go, what the fuck is a Zune? Some of you because you're young. Some of you because it's so obscure now you just don't remember. Zune was this brick of a multimedia player that Microsoft came out with in the 2000s. Like somewhere around 2006, I guess, somewhere in that range. And it was a competitor to the iPod, which also doesn't exist anymore. It crashed and burned. Every unique feature it had actually had a counterbalancing feature that made it worthless. Like, one of the cool things about Zune was, let's say I have a song on my Zune and you have a Zune and you like the song, it just like can send you the song. But DRM got in the way, and you could have just bought it yourself anyway, so now that didn't matter. It was a bunch of shit like that. Plus, it was a brick, and it wasn't very ergonomic, and it was from Microsoft, and no one cared because it wasn't cool. But if the government decided that every person deserved a multimedia music player, right, and decided it was the Zune format that you were going to get, and created a department of Zune, we'd still have those pieces of shit around today, and we'd all be paying for it. It's wonderful that the market is a freaking bitch. All right. It's wonderful the market is a harsh mistress. That is a wonderful thing. It means in order to be accepted, you have to do the work to bring something of actual value to somebody that actually cares, that will willingly part with their hard-earned money that they did the same for to partake in that which you have offered. It is the number one thing that has made civilization stable throughout history. It is not government. It is the market. And the market will not give you an easy up. It will not let you get by. It might even let you make $1 million off a pet rock, but that will fizzle out. If you want long-lasting duration in the market, you have to serve the mistress well, or the mistress will beat you and send you to hell. Okay? That's the way it works. It all results, when done right, in freedom and success. They all start with the same thing, execute. It doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't matter what it is. If you decide you're going to build a go-kart with your kid, something that millions of people have done. We used to make them when I was a kid out of a bed frame and a lawnmower engine and some wheels that we would find somewhere. Just saying, right? Like, it's not hard. You just have to do it. But there's a lot of people decide they're going to build a go-kart with their kid and they end up with a bed frame and a motor and a rusty wrench on the wall of their garage, and the kid's now in college, and the shit's still there, and eventually they get rid of it with a junk man. So it doesn't have to be some big idea. I'm going to take my kid fishing. And 2 years later, your kid's off to college and y'all ain't gone fishing. You see how real it is when you look at it that way? I'm going to get my basic blackout kit together because Jack did a show 2.5 weeks ago on it. And I realized that the power goes out in the middle of the night, not even the middle of the night, like after dark. And he's right. If I'm in the shower with soap in my eyes and the freaking lights go out and I can't see and my toddler's crying on the bed and the other kid's screaming downstairs and the spouse isn't home, well, I'm screwed. Like, I'm not going to die from this, but this is going to be a very inconvenient thing. And I can put these few things together in a box, put them on a shelf, put some power failure lights in. When the power goes out, it's not like, woohoo, yay, the power went out. But, yeah, we've done the things that we can do that were very reasonable to do in order to avoid the problem. But we didn't do it. And so eventually the power is going to go out, and it may just go out while you're in the shower with soap in your eyes and your kid's crying and screaming on the bed because they're scared. And your other kid's downstairs screaming that their video game doesn't work because they haven't, like, hey, we have a bigger problem than your video game right now. We need to fix this shit, right? Because you haven't had the discussion even. You haven't taken any action. Or it can be, hey, I have this really great idea for a website, and this website would do these things. I have this great idea for a product, and the product would do these things. And it actually is something that could change your life for the better forever, but you chose not to do it. So from itty-bitty things to great big things, do not let this form of cancer into your life. Do not let it erode your potential. Do not let it rob you. Don't be the person that says, I'm gonna, and doesn't 60,000 times in your life, and then at the end of your life wonders why you didn't get what you wanted out of life. That one, it's not the only thing, but that one thing can be what it was for you. And this is so easy to fix. This is, if you say you're going to do something, I want you to start doing this. The second you say it, ask yourself, am I just bullshitting? Right? Because your brain will accept that. I wasn't serious about that one, but I'm going to do this thing. And then you go do it. Your brain's like, okay, when he's serious, he means it and it's worth doing. When he's just talking, like, because sometimes we just talk to ourselves or other people, then it's okay. But if it's consistent, then the brain's like, fuck it, I'm out. I don't hear the keys in the door, then we ain't leaving yet. Mm-hmm. All right? Don't be that person. Be the person that when as soon as you say you're going to do something, you have that come to Jesus moment. Do I mean this? Right? Okay, if I mean it, how do I get there? Map out a simple timeline. Now, if it's I'm going to go make a sandwich, get up and go make your fucking sandwich. If it's I'm going to go turn the sprinklers on for the garden, get the fuck up and go do it. If it's something you can just do, in the minute you think this needs to be done now, go do it. You'd be amazed at how much shit you'll get done if you start doing that. And when you say, I'm going to go do something, then you need like a filing system that says, on the way to do that, I noticed this, and fuck, I'm going to come back and do that. I'm going to do this one thing. And I ain't doing shit else until I get this one thing done. Or if it's a bigger project, you start mapping out the steps. Then you might have another come to Jesus moment where you go, I see what it takes to do this now. And I see what it's going to cost me and these other things I'm already doing. This is not worth doing for me at this point. Maybe I'm going to hand this off to somebody, give this away. Your brain also says, okay, so when this guy says he's going to do something, he's serious. He analyzes it, and then he lets me know whether it's right to do it. We figure it out together. Is this a project we want to take on? It changes everything. So that's when I talk about these Spherical's laws of life, each one of them seems like something everybody knows, and it's just something you know that you know you should do. But each one of them, just one individual actually followed, accepted as what it is, not a theory. It is a law. Because if you do it, there will be certain things that will happen, and if you don't do it, there will be some certain things that will happen. That's what makes it a law. The law of gravity is the law of gravity. It's not a theory. In that if you go up on a roof and you dangle somebody off it and say, and the person says, but you said you'd kill me last, and you go, I died, and you let go of them, they fall to the fucking ground and die. That's what when I say it's a law of gravity, I'm not talking as a scientist. I'm talking about, like, we know what happens when you drop shit or people, they fall. If they fall far enough, they fucking break permanently sometimes, right? These laws are like that. The person who constantly says, I'm going to have an idea, and doesn't do it, is going to have that permeate their whole life. Give you one more character from my past and we'll wrap up today. Like Idea Guy. Idea Guy, his cousin, maybe his twin brother, It's a guy I've talked about before on the show, right? And it's not one individual person. We all know somebody like this if we're old enough anyway. Multicolor car guy. Remember multicolor car guy? If you were in the high school in the 80s, you knew multicolor. I guarantee you everyone had at least a few multicolor car guys. Multicolor car guy, if you've never heard this before, is the guy who bought this old piece of shit car, like a 68 Chevelle or something. It's just beat to shit. It's been in wrecks and whatever. So he starts actually doing something in that he'll find a fender at the junkyard and figure out how to get it on the car. So that's a step in the right direction, right? But multicolor car guy has a story. The idea guy comes out of him. One day, man, I'm going to get some Kelly Springfield 60s on the back, Krager mags, and Kelly Springfield 70s on the front, man. Black walls, white letters. I'm going to jack it up 4 inches in the back. Candy apple red, lacquer coated, beautiful paint job. I'm going to redo the whole engine. Eldebrock freaking valve covers, beautiful intake, right? I'm going to make this gorgeous car. And then, you know, you grow up, you go to college, or like I did, you go to the Army. You come back 3-4 years later, there goes multicolor car guy down the road. Now he's got a green fender on one side, a black hood, and a white fender on the other side, bald-ass fucking tires with stock wheels. He's really in the same car. When you become idea guy, you're a multicolor car guy. That car is never going anywhere except back to the junkyard it came from. It's never going to happen. Because that person's time preference is short, and all the things necessary to make that car into what it has to become always get deferred to later. The next thing, so what happens is they start. I'll give multicolor car guy that credit. They start. But then when they realize this is more than just a couple cans of Bondo, they're like, oh shit, rebuilding that motor is going to cost me, like back then, like $1,500. And, you know, this guy's, you know, making $1,500 a month. And he wants to go chase girls at the bar. He's going to go chase the girls at the bar. He's not going to put money aside to rebuild the motor. Short time preference is the ultimate life cancer. Hope you take that away from today's show. And if you have an idea, I want you today to start mapping out the framework to make it happen. And I'll tell you right now, don't be afraid to do it. Because if you map that framework out and you realize this is not the idea for me, that's okay. Get it the fuck out of your way. Okay? Let's say you needed to clean a room and it was filled with clutter. Before you can clean, you have to declutter. If the idea is clutter, identify it as clutter and eject the fucking thing. Get out of your way. This is why I'll come on the air and go, here's an idea for a business. And then you'll never hear me talk about it again. It got in my head. I know somebody might benefit from it. I absolutely know I do not have time to do it because it's too much time as a suck from what I already do. Or like it will work, but I will never make the ROI that I make doing what I do. So it's not a good business decision. So I get it out of my head by giving it away and I put it out in the universe. So and you know, some of you guys have run with those and that's great. It makes me feel good. But I declutter these ideas. I cannot sit around thinking about building something that I'm never going to build. I can't sit around thinking about creating something that I'm never going to create or doing something I'm never going to do because it leads to fucking inaction. Aaron's got it right. Fail fast. Fail fast. When you fail fast, you figure out what's not going to work and you go do something else. And here's the thing. When you fail at something like this, it hurts a little bit, but you realize, okay, so my life's not over. I'm not dead. They didn't throw me in prison. I'm going to go try something else. And if you keep trying, you'll find one that hits. I had some really big victories and failures before TSP. I had big victories that were like the Pet Rock guy. Market conditions changed and they went away. There was a time I used to just build stupid little websites, okay, and put Google ads on them and then go to like second tier search engines, like one that was back then was called 7Search or Lycos or something, and buy traffic for like a penny a click, didn't give a fuck what it was, and pushed anything remotely related to what that page was about for a penny a click over, and then about, you know, 50% of those people would click an ad on there that paid me like 25 cents. That's arbitrage. That's advertising arbitrage. And I made a lot of money. The best month I ever had, I made $9,800. I was working on that side. It wasn't even a business. I would call it a side income stream or revenue model. I was working on it about 2 hours a week. About 2 hours a week, I was making 10 grand a month on good months. And if I didn't do anything, it still would make me $4,000 or $5,000. A lot of people could retire on that. And then one day it all went away because Google changed their policy. There was nothing you could do about it. So is it good that I did it though? Hell yeah. I learned so much about so many different things with search marketing with it. And that money helped build my life up. But it's a good thing I wasn't dependent upon it. I didn't cry when it ended. I didn't feel good about it. I was pretty pissed when Google said, hey, sorry, tough shit, nothing you can do. I was angry. It changed the way I approached business from then on, but it made me a better business person. It made me a more successful business person. And I didn't stop having ideas. I hope you get that from this episode. I'm not opposed to you having ideas. In fact, lots of ideas. What I'm opposed to you doing is holding on to ideas you're never going to do anything with, wasting your life energy, burning your dash without accomplishing things that you really want to accomplish. With that, I hope you guys enjoyed today's show. If you did and you want to help support the show, remember, it's really simple to do. All you got to do is when you're going to buy something online, start at tspaz.com first. T-S-P-A-Z, tspaz.com. Start there. Click a link. Buy whatever you're going to buy. You help us out no matter what it is. Plus, you'll see all the items that I've reviewed over the years. These are items I actually use in my own home. Today's item of the day is the Thermomaven Instant Read Meat Thermometer. I know today's show wasn't about cooking, but all of us eat. And if you want to have more money, cook your own food. You'll have more money. It's that simple. You'll eat better and have more money. I don't care if Steak and Shake fries their battered seed oil soaked fries in tallow. It's still junk food. If you want tallow fries, cut up a potato and cook it in tallow at your house. You won't need this for that. But when you're cooking meat and some other things, you're going to want a tool like this. Now, I like the remote thermometers that you put into the big old thick roast or chop or whatever when you're cooking it on the grill or the whole chicken breast or whatever. But when you're cooking a lot of different meats, let's say chicken breast filet, a thinner steak, a thinner pork chop, those big probes just don't work. You need something you can get an instant read, i.e. an instant read thermometer. The Thermomaven does some things that make it my choice. One is it's actually fucking accurate, and yes, I've tested it, and a thermometer that isn't accurate in some ways is worse than no thermometer. You might be better off judging the meat by feel and appearance than using a thermometer that's wrong. So it's accurate. Number two, it uses a normal freaking battery. I don't remember which. It's either AA or AAA. If it's AA or AAA, I don't care because I have them on hand all the time, and when I open it up, oh yeah, it was AA, whatever. So it's an easy battery. A lot of these thermometers use like the kind of batteries you use like for an EOTech site or something like that, or a hearing aid or something. And the issue isn't that those batteries are that uncommon, because if you have things that use them, and we do, then you have them on site. But the for some reason, the meat thermometers that use them, they're almost impossible to change. They're just a bitch. The thing never wants to reseal right, seat right, whatever. Then the other problem most of them have is when you leave it open, and you will, and you leave it on the counter, they don't have an auto shut off. So now you come back and your hard to change battery that you may not have is dead, right? Where with this one, as long as you have a little Phillips screwdriver, you pop the cover off and replace the battery. And if you leave it inactive for any length of time, it auto shut off so it doesn't kill your battery. So accurate, just works, easy battery, $20. So if you don't have an InstaRead thermometer in your kitchen, you need one. And if you do have one, okay, but you're not happy with it, get this one and you'll be happy with it. With that, I'm ready to wrap up. Thank you guys for tuning in today. I know when I do shows like this, I can come off a little aggressive. It's because I care. I know I can come off a little bit arrogant, like I don't want to hear your fucking idea, but it's because that's what successful people do. And it's not arrogance. It's an admission that this applies to me as much as it does to you, in that I also have 24 hours a day. I have a business to run. I have a family to care for. I have bills to pay. I have recreation I want to partake in, and life I want to live, and life I want to enjoy, okay? Just like you. And that means if I said yes to 1 in 10 of these people that bring me an idea that they want my help with, I would literally, within a few months, have no time to do my business, take care of my family, take care of my investing, take care of building my retirement, right? Take care of all the things that I need to do to not only live my life, but live my best life and do a good job for you guys. So I have to say no. And I know there's people that think, well, like, once you've made it, don't you owe it to be? Actually, what you need to do when you've made it, yes, you should help people some. But you have to be very careful how you help people, because I'm going to tell you what I've learned over the years, too. Once I made it, when I helped people before they had done enough for themselves, it always ended up in them doing less and worse than if I had done nothing. I know that sounds cruel and harsh, but it might sound Machiavellian, but it's true. The people I've handed opportunities to have always blown them. The people that have stepped up and earned opportunities have blown it out of the fucking water. The people that were already there when I gave them a nudge, it really worked for them. It really helped them. So, yes, if you make it, then it is absolutely moral and right that you help others make it too. But you cannot do it for them. And if you did, you'd fuck up their business. Just with that, I'll catch you guys tomorrow with another episode.
They said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay.